Okay, thank you everybody for being here. Today I'll be talking about something that I've been working on for, I guess, the past year, and it's finally kind of coming together, essentially. And this is one of the applications for the general theory that we've developed to kind of show that, you know, we're not just talking about thin air, essentially. So what I want to describe today is a version in one higher dimension up of the toric code, which is essentially the Kitaev model. For example, in three dimensions, it's very well understood and very, I guess, straightforward. And also the correspondence between this particular Kitaev model, which is a field theory, and also its excitations, which describes the toric code, is quite clear. And I will...
Just one question.
Yep.
Is 4 3 plus 1 or 4 plus 1?
3 plus 1. Oops. Sorry. I don't know what happened. Ah, there we go. Okay. So, yeah, it's space-time. Yeah. So, yeah, all the dimensions are in space-time. So the motivation for this is essentially what I just described, that there is this correspondence between the story in 3D, and I want to lift it to a 4D story. And I will go through basically a review of what I call higher Drenfeld doubles, which is the key ingredient in this construction. And also there's something called a Poznak class. You don't have to worry too much about what that is. And also I will be giving you a kind of general construction, and I'll specialize to Z2. And then that will give me the Kitaev toric code in four dimensions. And also I'll have to introduce some twists. I'll explain what they are later. And the basic theorem, or the fundamental theorem that we prove in this paper, is the following. Basically, I can express higher categories, which describes four-dimensional gap topological phases, for certain gap topological phases, I can describe them using two categories. So it's basically just rewriting all the data on the right-hand side, and then putting everything on the left-hand side into that two Drenfeld double or higher Drenfeld double structure. And there's like a very systematic construction of all these structures on the right-hand side. So to begin, I will review the story in 3D. So the story in 3D is that for, you know, you have a two-dimensional toric code, you can describe it using what's called the Drenfeld center of the representations of Z2. So very schematically, representation of Z2 is 1 and the electron, or the electric particle, which is a Z2 particle. It follows like the Z2 fusion rule. You square it, it becomes the vacuum. When you take the Drenfeld center, what you're doing is that you are basically taking another copy of the representation category of Z2. So you have 1E and also another copy, which is called the magnetic counterpart of E, we call M. And there's a particular construction of the Drenfeld center, which gives it grating. And the grating is what gives rise to this fusion bound state F. Like you fuse E and M, you get F. So that's where this comes from. But in the continuum, right, we want to find an actual action, for example, to describe this kind of abstract description of the toric code. And it turned out that the field theory is a Z2 BF theory. And the action is just very simple. It's B and F, and you have the connection B and A, which are Z2 valued connections. And it's flat, right? So here, the equation of motion is just F equals 0. And also D of B is 0. So the fact is that from this three-dimensional field theory, the excitations, the Wilson lines and the dual Wilson lines, is going to form an algebra called the Drenfeld double, which is different from the Drenfeld center, right? Well, at least like a priori it's different. It's like a different construction, but you can prove that, essentially you can prove that there's this correspondence called the Tanaka-Krein duality, which allows you to basically give you an equivalence here, which tells you, okay, the Drenfeld center of representation of Z2 is equivalent to the category of representations of the Drumfeld double. So you just look at the algebra representations of the Drumfeld double. Essentially, you can imagine like I just take Z1 in inside rep. That's kind of the idea. And the whole theory is that I can construct this as an algebra. And it's well-defined, blah, blah, blah. Can even encode like more general structures. For example, if you have associators, then you have a three co-cycle twist on the Drumfeld double. But for the toric code, we don't need that. But in any case, there's also another construction, which is basically, okay, I have my field theory. How do I reconstruct the lattice, right? How do I basically construct like a class, deformation class of lattice theories, which flows in the to the continuum field theory that I'm given. And this, you can do it with this groupoid algebra over here. And you look at the representations of this guy, and it turned out that they are equivalent. Well, the representation theories are equivalent. Basically, the idea is that you decorate like triangulations of your manifold with representations of this thing. Then you construct, you can just build a gap projector commuting Hamiltonian out of that thing. So that's like a string net construction, essentially. Okay, so what is the story in four dimensions? So what do you know in four dimensions? To start out, we have two approaches to gap like symmetric topological phases. One approach is using higher categories, which is started by, you know, Wen and Kong Liang and Theo, Davide, etc. The other way is to use two-group field theory, essentially a higher gauge theory, developed by, well, I wouldn't say developed by, but there are works on this from Alex Bolivant, Clement, Ryan, Kapustin, etc., those people. So the question is, how are they related, right? I want to prove that they are describing the same physical system. So far as I know, there's no explicit, rigorous proof that I have this equivalence. The point is this equivalence. Otherwise, you can't like definitively say that they're describing the same thing, even though, you know, you have physical arguments to say that they are doing that. But that's as far as I know. That's like all the claims in like Xiaodang's paper is like using physical arguments. There's no proof, but. In any case, and also I can also think about, okay, given I have this, I want to do lattice reconstruction, which gives me like a 3 plus 1D lattice theory, which describes the given 4D gap topological phase. How do I do that? Well, I don't know. I'll only tackle the first one. The main point of this talk is to look at the first problem, and I'm going to solve it for G equals Z2. Okay? So I will begin by constructing this higher Drumfeld double, or I call the two Drumfeld double structure. So to begin, I start with a Pontryagin dual, basically like a Fourier dual pair of a finite abelian, which is a very simple thing that you can take like Zn, Z2, or S3, for example, if you want, if you're more ambitious. And I just form the two Drumfeld double, which is a graded combination, so to speak, of two things. One is I have degree zero on the left hand side. Degree zero, I have nothing. Degree one, I have the dual, kg hat. On the right hand side, I have kg and degree zero, and I have nothing in degree one. So what these degrees are should be telling you is essentially the dimensionality or the codimension of your excitations. But that's not so straightforward. That's kind of the intuition that you should have when you're reading like Xiaodang's paper or Kong's paper, Liang's paper, I should say. But that's the intuition. Essentially, I should have something graded because now I want to describe not only point-like excitations, but also lines, like strings, extended operators, for example. But what I can do is I can endow this structure, this graded structure, with something more. Like it's not just a two algebra, it's a two bi algebra, in the sense that I have products, which is graded, also co-products, which is also graded, and they're compatible. I need the co-product to give me like fusion structure on the representations. And it says group like, basically you have like the representation, the action of this this group, for example, KG in degree zero, the action of this guy on the tensor product of two modules is just given by X acting on the first, X acting on the second. It's the same X. So that's what group-like means. It's like a very simple version. And also there's this classification of this two-drum file double by what's called the post-nup class. So this is going to describe like the associator of fusion, but we don't need this. We don't have to worry too much. But another key thing is that I have a 2R matrix, like a higher version of R matrix, which allows us to describe braiding of lines and also surfaces. And it also encodes how the braiding, the braiding of surfaces and lines gives rise to braiding of lines by themselves one dimension lower. So for example, you can cut up, you can imagine the boundary of a particular surface, you look at how lines and surfaces braid, but if you only look at the boundary of that surface, you recover the regular braiding of lines in 3D, for example. So that's the idea. I'm not going to give you like the explicit like the explicit expression for these guys or how they're constructed, essentially. It's a kind of a roundabout way, but yeah, all of that was coming from our general theory and specializing to like a very small subset of cases, basically. Okay, so how do I construct a field theory which has the symmetry of the two-drum field double? Well, it's just this thing. It's just this guy. It's BF theory, very simply. But also, I have the flatness equations of motion. First of all, I introduced cocycles, which are valued in like a finite group. Play the role of the connection, but now B is a two-form. It's going to describe like surface holonomies, for example, a two-dimensional holonomy. A is just a regular flat connection. So A is flat, but B is not necessarily flat, which is coming from the post-nup class tau. So this can happen in general, and this is what happens when you have associativity. Weakening of the associativity, quote unquote. And how do I evaluate tau of A? Well, you evaluate, given a tetrahedron, you evaluate, you have A here, A here, A here, and then you just plug those into tau, and then you get tau of A. Basically, that's the idea. And you can find that in like Ryan and Anton's paper. And then essentially, I just write down topological field theory, which implements this flatness condition. That's what I'm doing. So, how do I look at excitations of this guy? Well, excitations are given by representations, right? I have Wilson lines, I have Wilson surfaces. I should take the graded structure of my two algebra, or my two group, into account in order to kind of reconstruct the modules or the two representations of my underlying two-drum field double. So how do I do this? Well, you can just kind of do it, but like you can just stare at like, for example, you take G equals Z2 and then you have Z2 in degree zero, Z2 in degree one. What are the irreducible representations of this thing? Well, it's just comprised of irreducible representation in degree zero, irreducible in degree one. That's basically it. But it turned out that because of the graded structure, you have four things instead of just like two. I guess it kind of makes sense that you have four things, but it's important that you keep in mind. Okay, so I probably have to explain what the D's are. The D's are what happens when I treat two representations as like a complex. So I'm basically looking at like a two-term complex, which emit an action, consistent action, by a complex of algebras. So in very fancy, in fancy mathematical language, I'm looking at modules of an A infinity algebra. That's basically what that is. And recall A infinity algebra have, like you have products and also your binary product, you have a tertiary product, which takes in three things. This tau is exactly a representative of tau, is exactly this tertiary product. That's basically it. And all the higher n-ary products are zero. Yeah. Because of that, I can just shrink everything to like the first two terms, but like that's mathematical jargon. In any case, I have four distinct two irreducible representations, and you can do very explicit calculations because I know exactly how to construct the structure of the two representation two category, the fusion and the braiding structure from these things, and also the underlying structure of the two Drumfeld double. I can do that. And I did that, and I get this structure. The key thing is that there are no one morphisms coming from, well, that there are no morphisms mapping between these two sectors. Basically, that's why I'm calling it electric and magnetic. Well, I mean, actually, that's not that's not why it's called electric and magnetic. It's just I have two sectors. And the identity component of gamma, which is basically, well, the thing that contains the fusion identity, one, looks like this. So I have endomorphisms on one, which has two things, one and E. Endomorphisms on C, also two things. And I have two maps that go back and forth between them, which I just call V. So given all this structure, I can use my coproduct.
Sorry, I think you just said this, but so they're modules of the ancient Lie algebra, but actually most of them are zero, so it's just like a Lie algebra plus the thing you call G-copiator, is that right?
So there's a procedure in particular to construct a Lie algebra from an underlying, not even associative, like just some algebra. Like you can just do it. It's called like left symmetric algebra. It doesn't have to be associative, but you can just take like the classical limit, essentially, and you get a Lie algebra. So if you do that for A infinity, you get L infinity, which is exactly what you said.
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah.
And physically, I'm supposed to think of there are lines and surfaces, and G just labels of surfaces or the lines. Do G and G label them separately, or do they label them together?
They label them together. So row one. Yes, so row one is labeling a quote-unquote representation. So these are chain homotopies, really. Yeah, the image of row one is a chain homotopy. And row one eats K of G hat.
That's labeled.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and also these guys just live in KG in degree zero. But this one is degree one. So not exactly. I want to use these objects to label surface operators in my theory, and also one morphisms to label lines. Yeah. So and like the I would say it's kind of a miracle that it just turned out that I have exactly the structure I want. And also you can kind of, I guess, use your intuition to think of, I have Z2 in degree zero, Z2 in degree one, and I should get the same thing. But it's not so obvious. Like from an actual computation, it's not so obvious. So I call this theory the invisible Torrey code. So I'll explain why it's called invisible Torrey code. It's not the actual Torrey code. In fact, it's not a gap topological phase at all. The reason is I have a functor, which is just built in because I have the identity component coincides. So I have a functor, but it's not monoidal. Does not preserve the fusion product, particularly this one. This one's wrong, right? It shouldn't be one, it should be one plus E. You should have that. And also, even worse, I guess, is that I can compute that all the R matrices are just the identity. It's all trivial. So all the braidings are trivial. Basically, all the excitations kind of don't see each other under braiding. So that's a problem, because you want your topological phases to be remotely detectable in the sense that every excitation should be detected by braiding it with something else. There should be something else in your theory that braids non-trivially with it. But here, I just computed that all the R matrices are the identity, so I have no braiding at all. And that's a problem. So how do I fix it? I fix it by twisting my two algebra. So what do I mean by twisting? Well, twisting just modifying essentially the algebra structure. So for example, I can consider group co-cycles, this bar E thing, consider group co-cycles which implements monoidality, essentially, of my representations. So you can imagine, okay, I have two copies, I have an element X in G in degree zero. I want to act on some two representation twice. It should be X squared, right? The rule, I guess, in usual like module theory of one algebras, regular algebras, the rule is that you have row one, row the representation of X times the representation of X prime should give you representation of X and X prime product together. But here, that doesn't have to be the case. In a two category, that's the thing. All the rules are just modified up to homotopy. That's what this bar E thing is doing. Okay, so that's what I want. And also, I also want another extension, which is at degree one, which is essentially the same thing. It's the same idea, basically. But I'm just doing it in degree one. And also, row ones, as I telling you guys that it's a chain homotopy, but there's a way to compose chain homotopies. And I modify the monoidality or the algebra relations of this composition of chain homotopies by some phase, basically. So I can do this. Everything just gets pushed up, essentially. So I'll make another comment. In the regular like rep Z2 or rep of the Drumfeld double of Z2 describing three-dimensional toric code, you can do something very similar to this. You can describe associator twists like this. You can do that. But here, the associator, very crucially, the associator here is described by the Polsonov class. It's not described by any of the twists. The Polsonov class is not a twist. It's an underlying structure of your two algebra. So that's something to keep in mind. But yeah, these are all the twists, and I'm going to justify why I call these things bosonic, fermionic, and I just write these things down. I just consider two representations of the twisted two Drumfeld double by this cocycle or by this cocycle, which just means I have both of them, basically. In fact, you can't consider it C-bar by itself. You have to have E-bar. Essentially, the idea is that you have to like take the fourth root of one, and you can't do that without E bar, because E bar gives you like a square root of one. But in any case, so how do they affect my two representation to category? Well, they occur when you try to like fuse two things together, right? Because like kind of by definition, that's where they happen. And you can do the explicit calculation. I did it, and I noticed that you have these modifications. Basically, v squared gets me the right thing. And also the full braiding of the electric particle, which is the non-trivial anomorphism on one, braids non-trivially with stuff in the magnetic sector. So I have a magnetic line and a magnetic Cheshire string, and they all braid non-trivially with this E guy. You can prove that it's minus one. Just directly from like the twists and also the structure of the 2R matrix. And also C bar, what does it occur? What occurs in modifying this fusion rule? I call it Cheshire because it's C squared. Without this twist, you have C squared equals C plus C, which is weird. It's non-invertible, but it's like a condensation descendant of the, I think the magnetic line, I believe. But here, if you have C bar, then you can prove that this is one. They fuse to one, which means that they're invertible. And now you can braid it with itself. So why is it called fermionic when I have C bar? Well, it's because I have this. I have a non-trivial braiding and also non-trivial braiding of the electric particle. I have non-trivial braiding of electric particle, self-braiding, then it's a fermion, right? With it's a Z2 charge. I keep calling it the electron, but without this property of self-braiding, it's not a fermion. It's a boson. But with this, it's a fermion. And also, this also means that the self-braiding of the Cheshire line is fermion as well. But what about the magnetic line? Well, you have to do some other computation. In fact, you can do the computation, and you notice this guy is the full braiding of C star and C, but C is fermionic and C star bosonic, so that's why you get E on the third term. But that's basically some detail. But you just compute it. Like self-braiding of the magnetic line is trivial, so it's a boson. Basically, that's what the self-consistency of the R matrix and also the braiding structure of my two representation, two category, gets me. I have to have this. There's also another argument, I'll just make a comment. There's also another argument coming from Theo's paper over here for why this has to be the case. It goes through like the spectral sequence, some spectral sequence calculation. But here you can see it directly, just from all the structures that you have. So all that calculation proves this. That's all I want to say. And one final comment is that these twists actually enter your action as non-dynamical cohomological terms, basically. So they enter like this, essentially. So once you pin down all the structures, braiding structure, your fusion structure of your two category, and given that you have Pang and Krang, given you can do this, you can just directly reconstruct what your action should look like. That's the idea. So this really gives you a correspondence between your two category description and the field theoretic description for gap for the topological phases. Well, I'm pretty much finished, but yeah, no, it's okay. Yeah, but I'll just say a few words about where to go after this. Well, as I mentioned, that I wanted to construct like a class of UV completion, essentially, on the lattice, and this requires some kind of Morita duality with this two-groupoid algebra, which is actually studied by Clement and Alex in 2021, 2022. So that'll be kind of nice. It gives you a nice complete picture, right? And also, I want to look at the 4D boundary of the W2-W3 gravitational anomaly. So this was also studied by Theo in his paper. But it's kind of like the anomalous version of the Z2, you know, the fermionic guy here, the spin Z2 gauge theory. It's kind of the anomalous version. And he specifically said that he doesn't think that there's a Drumfeld center description of this category, but my guess is that I should be able to endow like additional structures on my Hopf 2 algebra so that I get exactly this. But that's for future work. And also, you know, you can think about quantum gravity, I guess, if you wish. and yes, that's it. Thank you.
Really quick questions?
You mentioned that maybe there are some sort of arguments, physical arguments, to in a sense see this link between two categories. So
yeah.
Rather than you know nothing mathematically rigorous, but kind of physically inspired, mm-hmm. You remember something?
Yeah. So the idea is essentially just looking at how you have excitations of different co-dimensions, and you look at how, for example, I have a line. Let's say it's a Wilson line, should be labeled by some group element, right, G. I also have a surface like this, another group element, which may be a different group. But the idea is that if you pass this particle through this surface, what should happen? Well, what should happen is this. Somehow, G gets changed to this H acting on G, essentially. And why is this a group action? Well, it's because you want this thing to kind of... So let's say you have two surfaces. It should be giving you the same result. If you, like, you have two planes like this, this should be equal to this, right? You have H, H prime, H, H prime, like... that's why it's a group action, and then blah, blah, blah. You can make some arguments. Oh, this is just a two group. Like, you can just say it. Like, but the idea here is that it's not really two group elements that label your excitations, it's your representations, and also it's intertwiners, basically. You're one morphism. So it's kind of subtle to see that, but some people just take this physical argument as given, I guess, kind of. But yeah.
Thank you, Hank.
Thank you.